This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Foster Mobley, and Foster will help introduce himself. We're going to ask Foster questions about burnout and why it's been historically been so bad and some of the thoughts on it. He's an expert in the subject, an expert on things that can be done to improve and deal with burnout and why some of the sort of gimmicky things don't work and what does work. Foster, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Scott, thanks for this invitation to participate in the podcast, especially about this vital issue that affects the well-being and sustainability of many, many physicians. And I would be remiss if I didn't begin by acknowledging the heroic work done by many on the front lines right now by highly skilled caregivers and the people that support them just as tirelessly. My name is Foster Mobley, as you said. I'm founder and chairman of FMG Leading. We are in our 36th year of operation, 32 years of that. We've been primarily focused in the healthcare market. I'm an author. I've published an award-winning book called Leadership, Rethinking the True Path to Great Leading. I'm a professor of leadership and change at Boston College and also advisor and coach to elite college athletic coaches, having been part now of 9 NCAA championships. And I live in Bozeman, Montana.
Well, that's fantastic. What a magnificent mix of things that you do, including working with NCAA champions, physicians, which are champions today, healthcare leaders, and the whole staff of hospitals and health systems. Talk to us a little bit about how historically burnout has touched hospitals and healthcare companies and systems.
It's touched it rather dramatically. It's now considered by many in like World Health Organization, for example, has classified burnout as an official medical diagnosis. It negatively affects individual physicians. It contributes to this issue of physician shortages. And you know, the interesting thing that not a lot of people talk about is that it fosters a divide between generations of physicians who have different experiences with respect to burnout, long hours, administrative burden, and that sort of thing. So it's a significant issue affecting physicians now and into the future.
Thank you. And just a sense of how is burnout, I mean, and obviously it's too early to tell, but some of your thoughts on how burnout will be impacted by COVID-19. Any thoughts there so far?
Well, of course, and that's a very fair question, Scott. It's interesting, as I speak with many healthcare clients and colleagues and friends across the country, what we're seeing right now is there's a huge difference between fatigue, of course, and burnout. And right now, if you had to ask me to speculate, will burnout increase post-COVID-19? I'd say the anecdotal evidence currently is no. It's so first of all, the burnout problem is significant enough already. But my hunch is no for three reasons. First, we are in a crucible of time in which we will be changed as a society. It's almost as though, you know, Scott, your first year at Harvard Law School, it was a crucible for you, and how you were shaped to think and act and talk changed you for the rest of your life, I'm guessing. Well, the same thing with this in the healthcare world. This could be an important inflection point because we're dealing with capacity that is strained to the limits. We're dealing with care models like a primary care model that's going to probably have to be relooked at, payments to primary care docs, et cetera. And when I talk to frontline providers of care, doctors, nurses specifically, I'm hearing, it almost defies logic, but there is no conversation about burnout currently. And I had to ask myself why. I think it has to get back to the dignity of work. You know, doctors and nurses have leaned in and doing what they do best. And some of the undue administrative burden has been lifted. I was speaking with Nancy Lee, Chief Clinical Officer at Children's Hospital Los Angeles. And she said, it's interesting, the meetings that we thought we couldn't do without, we're doing without. And in fact, things are actually operating even better. So it's causing them to rethink the nature of some of the administrative burdens that have been put on docs. And freeing up the primary cause of burnout, according to the World Health Organization study, which are too many bureaucratic tasks, including charting paperwork, et cetera. So people are working hard.
Let me ask you.
But we don't hear a lot about burnout.
A follow-up question to that. How important is having a purpose in life in what you do to reducing burnout, or having burnout be less of a thing? And obviously a huge difference between fatigue and burnout. I love the fact that you differentiate those two. But how important is this life purpose and sort of self-actualization to avoiding burnout?
I'm going to take you on a historical journey, Scott, because we, as our firm, started studying this notion of burnout and resilience in the last couple of years, because it's been a topic in healthcare. We looked at historical roots, and most recently, the horrors of the Holocaust. And we looked at the successful patterns of the people that were able to not only survive, but thrive after. Many writers talking about that, and clarity on one's purpose and connection to purpose and meaning in life is the number one thing that's brought up over and over again as key to survival and resilience through times of incredible stress. So I'd say it's everything. It's just vital here.
So in a crisis, and you've pointed this out well, people kind of find this purpose. That they might not have expected it to come in this way, but they sort of find a purpose. How do people find that purpose year to year, day to day, to help themselves stay self-actualized, to help avoid this burnout?
Well, that's where some of the self-care remedies have been talked about in healthcare. And I think they're necessary, but not sufficient. So is it important that each of us have some sort of centering process where we remember who we are, that we ground ourselves in our purpose and our calling each day, that we take care of ourselves, critical stuff, but it's not sufficient. And what I would say is here's a great example of how an organization's culture can keep one aligned to central purpose of each of us. You know, my friend, Julie Kennedy Ehlert, Chief Experience Officer at Vidant Health in Eastern North Carolina, got there 3 years ago, and with an incredible leadership team driven by a very progressive CEO, has been working on building a culture of love and inclusion, believe it or not, in which it calls everybody to be reminded of their core purpose every day. The people who are not physicians are serving docs and serving teammates. And they do it brilliantly. They focus their attention. They measure only a couple of things, focus on physician sat and employee engagement. And they are called to and are reminded of their core purpose every day.
Well, fantastic. And what are, and I love that, that you're reminded of your core purpose, but you're really building a workforce of love and inclusion. What are the core things? Talk to me more about what can be done to reduce, improve burnout?
Another fair question. You know, my firm, FMG Leading, focuses on looking at burnout through a human capital lens. That is, treating labor as more than just labor. And I'll give you a great example. One contributor to burnout is unnecessary or seemingly unnecessary bureaucratic tasks, or spending too much time on various issues or too much time at work. A leader who is not performing at his or her best, who is afraid to have a difficult conversation, will have the same meeting, the same conversation with a number of people many times unnecessarily. And so a very simplistic example of how leader quality, an important element of human capital, will affect how effective an organization is, how resilient it is, and how efficient it is. And all of those things are kind of counterindicated to burnout. So one simple way is strengthen leaders. As simple as that sounds, the right leaders operating in the right way make a huge difference in creating cultures of supporting doctors.
Talk about that for a moment, just because I intuitively understand what you're saying. If you have a leader that's not a good leader, it causes so much internal workplace of people second guessing, questioning. There's so much stress all over the place just based on they're not being a leader that sort of is a positive leader or a leader that people trust for their competence and their compassion. How does a leader get better at this? And is it something that they can get better at, or does the board need to change the leader and find someone who does the right things?
Well, the answer is both. They can absolutely get better. If they couldn't, I wouldn't have a job as an executive coach and advisor to C-suite leaders. So I really believe deeply in the developmental possibility of people. And that said, based on willingness or based on need in the moment, sometimes boards need to change out those executives. I'm a huge believer in leadership for many reasons that you just mentioned. Here's another. 70% of an organization's culture is determined by the behaviors and the actions of leaders. So if you have a leader who's unwilling to be courageous, who loses focus, who doesn't hold people accountable, et cetera, it's more than just an impact on that person's dress. It has a cultural implication that tells people how to behave in a certain in that organization. So it is important that that leader be acknowledged, get help, be held accountable, be measured. We're huge believers in metrics. So, for example, you know, Children's Hospital Los Angeles, for example, is an important client of ours, and they do leadership 360s every year on their top, I'm going to guess, 20 leaders. And the data is shared with each other and with the CEO, and there's very candid, non-punitive conversations about how effective they are individually and collectively and what they plan to do about it. So it's an important, the metrics are an important piece of calling leaders out in a helpful way and charting their course for development.
No, thank you. And that's fantastic. It's a fascinating stat that 70% plus of an organization's sort of how they are handled and how you deal with things depends upon the leader, that the leader really can drive the culture, and a good leader or a leader that's handling things in a certain way can have a huge positive impact on a culture, whereas the opposite is true as well, I take it.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
And Foster, you work with some great organizations. What you say resonates really well with myself and I'm sure our audience. How do people learn more about yourself and FMG Leading?
Well, thank you for that question, Scott. All of our information about FMG Leading is found on our website, fmgleading.com, or periodicals on LinkedIn at FMG Leading. We are quite active in the thought leadership space and promote, do articles and white papers all the time. So if people want to learn more about not only who we are, we've got the slew of bios on the website and client testimonials, but also thought leadership pieces that people can access.
Well, Foster, we appreciate you joining us today. The subject of leadership and how it applies to burnout, how it applies to everything else, it's probably never been more important. It just is. You see a epidemic of burnout in the workplace of all sorts, and a good leader that touches people in the right way and gives them confidence has a huge impact on reducing stress and helping lead organizations. And it's an important time for it, as it always is. Foster, I appreciate you joining us today so much. Thank you.